This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Shirai Kutin with Ikusu Chuang and Brian Fernandez. Now, lots of stories in our crosshairs this morning. Let's begin with Lotte Chemical. Some 3.25 billion ringgit of market capitalization was wiped out yesterday after petrochemical producer Lotte Chemical saw its share price tank. At the closing bell, its share price fell some 27.6% from 4 ringgit 70 cents to 1 ringgit 43 cents. That's, of course, much lower than the group's initial public offering of 6 ringgit and 50 cents. Brian, where do we go with this story? What's happening here?
Well, basically, yesterday afternoon, there was an announcement by the group that of a 72% plunge in the net profit for the second financial quarter ended 30th June 2017. Profits fell from 404 million to 113 million, and quarterly revenue fell from 1.99 billion to 1.78 million, 11% fall.
Yeah, just a quick correction. I misspoke just now. It fell 1 ringgit 43% to 4 ringgit 70 cents. Not, it didn't fall to 1 ringgit 43 cents. Yes. Not cause panic and pandemonium out there.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. But I think in terms of the quarterly numbers, the company has guided the market to understand that basically the fall was due to, I think, 9 days of outages in terms of its water supply, a disruption in water supply at its plant in Johor, which has led to production falling. And I think they met fund managers and analysts yesterday, and they basically, I think the market came away quite placated by the remarks made by management. But I guess from the viewpoint of shareholders on a wider basis, the company should have and would have taken mitigatory measures to, I guess, reduce the over-dependence on one source of water.
Yeah, but are investors, retail investors especially, particularly jittery? I mean, if a company that you think has a long-term prospects has short-term problems, would you dump the shares?
Well, that's exactly what happened yesterday, because the company lost about 26-odd% of market value, or about 3.75 billion or something, which is a lot. I mean, considering the fact that they just came to the public markets or returned to the public markets just a few weeks ago.
But I think one of the things also is the fact that it came so close, and this profit warning or this plunge in profits came so close. Well, it's less than 3 weeks ago that they IPO'd. So I think that overall, this overall IPO has had many challenges along the way in terms of revising down the pricing because it was perceived to be overpriced. There are also bigger issues in terms of the jitteriness behind the stocks. Now, one of the reasons for the fall or the revised pricing in terms of the IPO was the fact that the appetite from institutional investors, especially foreign institutional investors, just wasn't there. And primarily was due to the fact that they are industry-driven, not company-driven perspectives. Now, the industry is very highly cyclical. And now we're really in 2006, we're already in the onward. It's already the down cycle. So the super cycle for this is already gone. And on top of that, there's a gradual deterioration of operating rates and also capacity increases within the industry itself. All of this doesn't look very good for Lotte Titan in the near future.
So, but the question then, I guess, one would ask is why go for an IPO when you have a down cycle?
Well, because they had debts to, I guess, to address. And
they had that project in Indonesia.
They wanted to.
You know, but there was, a few weeks prior to the IPO, Bloomberg ran a story, actually a quite damning article, saying that the company, not only did they fail to increase production capacity, but they also, got the timing all wrong, which explains a great deal the reason behind the share price, the dialing back of the share issuance, as well as the price.
What about the question of Maybank underwriting this IPO?
Well, as the underwriter, Maybank undertook a stabilization effort and bought back a total of about 27.7 million shares, representing about something in the region of 4.8% of the total shares offered during the IPO. Now, that translates to about 174 million of shares which it had to buy back. So that's going to have some impact on Maybank's bottom line as well, because they've got to recognize some of the losses. I think, Chang, what are your thoughts on this in terms of loss recognition of the value of the shares?
Well, you see, that's the thing is, IPOs are no longer the rubber stamp to success as they used to be in the past. And, you know, sometimes the underwriting job is a bit of a, you know, is a bit of a knife edge, isn't it? Because it can go either direction. And I think the fees would have been interesting for the bank, but not obviously the share price. And sometimes, you know, merchant bankers, there's always a bit of a tussle behind closed doors about how to price the IPO or when you come out. And it's always, you know, good advice or some advice versus the opinions and whims of the founder or the CEOs. It's always a bit of a tussle.
Okay. Also in the news, the veteran banker Tan Sri Tay Hong Piao is retiring as the non-executive chairman of a public bank on January the 1st, 2019. So not next year, but the year after. He's helmed public bank group for over 50 years, setting it up in 1965. Yeah, before I was born, actually.
Well, yeah, you know, he's actually born in 1930, which is just 5 years younger than Tun Mahathir. He was actually born in Singapore, I think, and he went to the Anglo-Chinese school. You know, so he's got four children, three boys, I think, one daughter, none of which want to take over, and in fact, none of which are executive in the bank. So, you know, there always comes a time when the curtain is drawn on an illustrious career. Our YouTube is replete with videos of his birthday celebrations, very ostentatious and highly glamorous.
What about the market response to this, or the response of investors? Do they look at this with trepidation?
I mean, there was a time in the distant past when Tuan Tay Hong Piao was very, very operational, I guess, and very, very very involved in the business. But he's since, I think in the last few years, he's really taken a bit of a backseat. His board of directors, his management team are very, very good. And this is whole succession plan in place.
Brian, do we have any numbers on the performance of public bank group?
Yeah, so one of the things is public bank is admired by the investment community and the banking community at large, really, and has won multiple awards, both as best bank of the world, I think, this year, last year, you know, the year before, best managed, best asset quality among Malaysian banks. It has the lowest cost-to-income ratio. So the industry average is something in the region of about 48% or so. Guess public banks is only 32.3%.
Yeah, all you need to do is go to a public bank branch and check out the ATM machines. They're about, they're about 15 versions ago. They'll still spit out money, but they're just not the best machines in the world. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, I guess. But, from a shareholder perspective, and if you've ever been to a public bank AGM, right, it's like going to a Van Halen concert. It's like going to Ed Sheeran concert.
No,
because there's literally thousands and thousands of shareholders' adulation. You can taste the adulation, the crowd.
Like a Warren Buffett gathering?
Like a Warren Buffett. And the first chart that will show you is the fact that if you had bought 1,000 shares of Public Bank when they went public in 1966 or whatever, for whatever, 2,500 ringgit, you would then, that same 1,000 shares would be worth something like 2.3 million ringgit today, including dividends, bonuses, entitlements, and what have you.
Because I was born in 1966, they should have bought shares. I want to ask you about the bank succession. Do we have any details on who's going to fill this vacuum and where they might take this?
And this is where I have concerns, of course. Now, Tan Sri Tay, as in spelled T-A-Y, Alec, is basically the managing director. He's already 73 years old. The deputy CEO, Dato' Chang Kat Kiak, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is the deputy CEO. He's 62 years old. So in contrast...
And he's young by comparison.
Yes, he's young by comparison. But if you look at, say, for example, the Maybank group president and CEO, he's 49 years old. Tengku Zafrul of CIMB, I believe, is something in the region of 45 years old. So there is a significant gap in terms of the age. And in the era of digital bank moving forward, one wonders how public bank, which has been so successful before, will be able to meet the challenges of fintech attacking its traditional business base.
Very good question. Only time will tell, I guess.
Only time will tell. Lovely segue into the next story. The Auditor General's report, and that comes, of course, every year, and the new Auditor General, newly minted Auditor General, Dantri, Dr. Madina Mohammed, says, gives the thumbs up to a lot of ministries, giving them excellent five-star ratings. So five-star ratings gives you an excellent thing. This includes a huge number of ministries, some 25 in all, compared to just 16 in 2015. Is it that the ministries have improved or have standards dropped?
Well, I think it's... I'd say expectations drop.
How do you say this politely on air?
I'm trying to formulate something to say politely, but let me just give you some data and then you can formulate your own opinion. With those headline numbers, where 25 all ministries had got 5-star ratings.
Excellent.
But actually, only 72 out of 265 government officers have actually been following main procedures. And 73%.
It's like saying, Brian, I give you an A for mathematics, but actually you can't really count. You can't add 2 plus 2 together.
Well, that might be a bit extreme.
Exactly. So the report mentions failure to manage payment receipts, failure to recording of certain stock items, failure of department heads to conduct spot checks to ensure compliance, failure to ensure quality of work, supplies and services, improper payments. So that there's a laundry list of exceptions, but then they all get 5-star ratings.
Well, what about the 353 recommendations? Very quickly, we can have that.
Well, primarily out of the 353 recommendations, two were pertaining to the federal government's financial statement of 2016, 90 to federal government ministries and department of activities, and the balance is really financial management associated with government departments.
Okay, we're going to be coming back, and this is a story I think we're going to be that has legs. We didn't get a chance to talk about Tekun that lost some 209 million ringgit of public money.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.